Hello, friends. You're listening to our Mission Path. I'm Timothy Downing. On today's Theological Thursday, we want to tackle a subject called the Enneagram. Recently, an associate pastor at a well-known Church of God asked the question, should we be using this measure of personality? Because she is part of a staff that is taking the Enneagram so that they can work together as a team. The Enneagram as a way of understanding personality comes from very doubtful beginnings. But let's go back further. A Christian mystic by the name of Evagrios Ponticos in the 4th century came up with the idea of the Enneagram. Now, he did not use it to explain personality. No, instead he used it to explain the 8 deadly thoughts, plus an overarching thought he called love of self. And so he was actually explaining the deep and dark recesses of human sin, not necessarily human personality. Fast forward to about 1949, and the Enneagram was taken kind of in a New Age way by a couple different teachers. They took this Enneagram figure and they explained their cultic ideas about personality with it. Right off the bat, I think the Christian should be careful, tread very lightly, if they are looking to the Enneagram to understand their personality. Origins are significant. Starting points are very important. That being said, this way of understanding a personality type is clothed in Christian language. The 9 different characteristic roles are all things like reformer or helper, giver, achiever, individualist, romantic, and the 9th one being peacemaker. These are all terms that can very well fit into Christianity, or at least Christianese. And of course, those who teach this way of understanding personality types speak of ego fixations and holy ideas. They speak of basic fear and basic desire, temptation, vice and passion, virtue. All of these ideas and terminology reflect Christian belief. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are Christian in origin. Before we dip our toes into theology today, I want to give at least one more criticism of the Enneagram before we look to the core of the issue. Scientists, psychologists, don't tend to believe that this is a good way of understanding personality. So the scientific community has rejected this as a legitimate personality test. In fact, one of the big issues with the Enneagram is that the journey to self-discovery through this method can't be tested, and it's vague. It's also self-reliant. You kind of shoehorn what you think you are into the theory. It's not necessarily a discovery of a personality type, but it's more of a self-focused indication of what personality type you think you already have. When I was in college, we took the Myers-Briggs personality type test. We took it several times, but I do have a problem with that as well, because again, you're taking the test for you. And of course, you and I know that a person can very well not see themselves clearly or see themselves differently than what they actually are. Aside from the lack of objectivity, there's also very little scientific evidence that this actually confirms your personality type. But we're not really discussing the Myers-Briggs personality test, and so let's turn our attention back to the Enneagram. At the core of any personality test is the human personality. And from a biblical understanding, we know that human personality is, of course, fallen in nature. In other words, though we were created in the Imago Dei, you can read about that in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 through 27, where God says, let us create man in our image. We are made male and female. He created us in his image. But shortly after that, we fell from his image. We marred his image through sin, through the act of participating in sin, and through Adam's sin, all people have sinned. In other words, that original sin has affected all of us. There's a popular song at the time of recording of this podcast, and one of the lines says, we were born sick, I've heard them say it. And it's an attack on Christianity, an attack on belief, but they get that right. We were born sick. And to deny that doesn't do you any good. In fact, to just simply affirm that by affirming the sickness of your personality apart from Christ really doesn't do you any good. In Colossians 3:10, the Apostle Paul speaks about this. He says, and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Again, in Romans chapter 12, we read about how we are to live our lives as living sacrifices, holy and acceptable to the Lord. We are to renew our minds in this way. You see, the sin-sick personality that many people have is not the ideal personality that we are to achieve. Now, I say achieve, and it's really an achievement through the work of Jesus Christ, not our own. Only he can cleanse us. Only he can purify us. Only he can change us. The Apostle Paul writes again in Galatians chapter 2, verse 20, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. You see, the Christian view on this is that our sin sickness has to be redeemed, has to be justified, it has to be cleansed. Simply to point out who we are apart from Christ does us no good. And really the struggle with the Christian life is that we know we are sinful and we need to struggle towards holiness. That doesn't mean that we can earn it. That doesn't mean that we can work for it and achieve it on our own. No. What that means is that we follow Jesus Christ. As Paul says, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. You see, dear friends, that is the goal of the Christian walk. Less of me, more of Christ. One of the greatest apologies for the Christian faith, apologies not as in I'm sorry, but apologies as in a ready defense of the Christian faith, is the fact that every single one of the disciples of Jesus Christ, save Judas, changed in a way that is noticeable. In fact, in the early days of the church, one of the astonishing things about these unlearned men is that they were just simple fishermen. And yet they were able to stand up against all the religious elite and go toe-to-toe with them. Why? Because Jesus took each of their personalities and changed them to be more like him. The Peter that was the leader of the church was not the same rough and tumble Peter who was a fisherman. And dear friend, in your testimony, it's the same way. Who you were before Christ, that personality that you had, well, it's changed because of Christ, has it not? And if it has not, let me ask, have you been crucified with Christ? Or are you still living? Well, dear friends, as we think about personality types and how to discover them and how to weave them into a good working relationship on pastoral staffs and perhaps in workplaces or in families, let me just encourage you. I don't think you need the Enneagram. I don't think you need the Myers-Briggs. I don't think you need any kind of personality psychology. What you need is a clear understanding of your fallen nature, who you were before you met Jesus Christ, how you came to be His child, and now what are you like after receiving the grace that He has given you. The goal has always been to be less like us and more like Christ. So my bottom line on the Enneagram is, it's a very fine thing if by it you mean a 9-sided polygon. But other than that, I don't think it really helps you in any significant way. Friends, if you have comments or questions about today's Theological Thursday, please go ahead and put them in the comment section of this post. My family and I serve Jesus Christ in Ecuador. We love following after Him on His mission. If you'd like to know more about our ministry, please go to ourmissionpath.com. Thank you for listening, and thank you for joining us along our mission path.